and Finance and Revenue is open, full schedule today. I would make an announcement that the work of the principals on 1533 from the Speaker's office to the city to industry and developers has been really fruitful, and I'm very grateful to people who have been meeting all weekend, late last night. And it appears there is an agreement that I think everybody can come to the center on in the form of an amendment that's being drafted right now. It's the dash sixes. The dash fives are ready to go. We have fiscal reports, but what I'd like to do is later stay in recess and meet later this afternoon with hopes of perhaps voting on the dash sixes and voting the bill out of this committee. So that's the status of 1533. I will open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1533. I know there are some people who have signed up to testify today, but given where things are, I'm not sure you still need to unless you really want to. So perhaps you want to stand down, perhaps you want to come up anyway. So I want to give everybody their day in court if they've signed up, and that's how this process works. So why don't I call your names? If you want to stand down, that's fine. If you want to come up, that's fine, too. John Van Landingham. All right.
That one's out.
All right. And he's with Civil. Ryan Fisher. And Nikki Terzia.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name's Ryan Fisher. I'll be extremely brief. I just want to put on the record that on behalf of the Oregon Housing Authorities, we are very happy to support this bill, and we have been briefed on what the Dash 6 amendments will do, and we're excited that everyone has come together. So I just wanted to put that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, Nikki Terzia here on behalf of the IZ Coalition, or now some members of the IZ Coalition. I was not necessarily planning on speaking this morning, but I do feel like there are still some members and some voices of our coalition that need to be represented, and they still have some concerns around the percentage of MFI, and there's still some concerns around the minimum units outside of the Portland metro areas, and any myriad of details and amendments that may truly still be coming. I don't know that for some of the folks that are a member of my coalition that they could really ever get to yes, but we know that there's been a lot of work that's gone into this, and I think much of the deliberation between stakeholders and the committee is appreciated. We would just hope that this body would stand strong in coming back and committing to revisiting some of these details if, in fact, they do not work for some portions of the state over the next year or so.
Senator Buckles.
And, Mr. Chair, I would be happy for the other policy committees that are supposed to be dealing with this to come back and work on it.
Thank you. Thank you both, Ryan. Eva Ripetow and Ethan Nelson. Thank you.
For the A41s.
Good morning, Chair Haas and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of Senate Bill 1533. My name is Ethan Nelson, and I serve as the Intergovernmental Affairs Manager for the City of Eugene. Eugene, like other communities and many up and down the West Coast, is in the midst of a housing crisis. Given current resources, Eugene has the capacity to support production of about 100 affordable housing units per year and rehabilitation of 100 units as well. Housing costs in Eugene-Springfield area have risen sharply over the past 25 years, while incomes have risen slowly. As a result, the majority of renters in Eugene, 54%, are considered housing cost burden, while approximately one-third of homeowners are also cost burdened. As part of our land use general plan update, which is in Vision Eugene, we have projected over 35,000 new residents coming into Eugene in the next 20 years. This equates to 15,000 new homes, both single-family and multifamily units. As you've heard from other testimony throughout this process, the housing crisis is not simply for affordable housing, but also for adequate workforce housing to meet current and forecasted need. The reduction of federal funding to communities through the HUD, CDBG, and HOME programs has only widened the funding gap in many communities. And while the legislature provided much-needed funding for affordable housing in 2015, Senate Bill 1533 goes beyond the allotment of dollars to make locally controlled tools to address housing needs. In November, Eugene Mayor Kitty Piercy joined Mayor Hales in Portland and the mayors of Los Angeles, Seattle, and San Francisco to tackle the issue of homelessness head on. At the core of this work is the provision of stable, affordable housing. The West Coast Alliance of Mayors has engaged HUD Secretary Castro to understand the housing affordability issues facing West Coast cities. The Alliance has issued letters to Congress and has called for increasing federal funding in the 2017 budget for CDBG, home, VASH, and tenant-based rental assistance programs. The point is of this to say is we're not alone. Cities are struggling to meet the housing needs of our growing populations, and we need assistance at the federal level, at the state level, and the ability to address the specific conditions at the local level. The Senate Bill 1533 construction excise tax provisions have the potential at the 1% rate to produce locally dedicated revenue for affordable housing projects between the range, and this is in Eugene, of $800,000 to $2.5 million annually. That range is due to the cyclical nature of in the construction sector and the amount of building permits that come through our programs. But in comparison, just as an example, this amount doubles the city's current budget for affordable housing projects. And so it is very substantial, and it provides a very powerful tool. In closing, I thank you for your time and consideration of this testimony and urge you to support the Dash 5 amendments and the Dash 6, as we've seen currently before you. Thanks.
Questions? Senator Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Ethan, for your support for the bill and the city of Eugene's support. I did want to call to attention something that you said in your testimony, that is that over the last 25 years, housing has gotten more expensive and wages aren't keeping up. This is a long-term problem that we are now, I mean, is at a boiling point and is a crisis now, and it's multifaceted. And that's why some of us have been advocating for multifaceted solutions, some of which are in this bill. And I'm glad to see that the city is going to support it. Thanks.
Thank you. Senator Bertschinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since the good Senator Edwards brought it up, wasn't Lane County at one time very dependent on the timber industry?
Chair Haas, Senator Bertschinger. Yes, Lane County has a strong timber history.
And because of the decline in the timber industry, could that not be a reason that the wages are low?
Chair Haas, Senator Barcher, I'm not sure about to extrapolate what the reduction in the timber economy would do to Lane County wages over time. I know that it is part of that challenge.
I think that it would be good if you looked into that, because I think Lane County could benefit themselves very much so. Those jobs that were lost were good family wage jobs. You could raise a family, buy a house, put some money away for retirement, and send your kids to college on those wages. And because of the decline, I think that's some of the problem there. It's something that you folks in Lane County probably ought to reevaluate. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, less than the speaker over
there. Eric Kanzler? I don't know if you still wanted to come up, Eric. Yeah.
Good morning, Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, Eric Kanzler here representing the City of Bend. So the City of Bend is supportive of the Dash A5 amendment. I understand we're going to have a technical tweak. I will need to review that, but generally it seems okay. So I'm going to speak to the Dash 5 A5 since I haven't had a chance to think about the final change. So the City of Bend has supported taking a measured approach to inclusionary zoning since prior to session. And the Dash A5 contains a number of specific things that we wanted, including setting a lower limit on development size, setting a maximum percentage of required units that is no more than 20%, and having the ability to use in lieu of fees, among other a variety of other incentive incentives and offsets to provide flexibility both for the city and for developers. We don't like that the bill requires that all units be targeted at incomes above 80% AMI, and with such a measured approach, we're also disappointed that the bill doesn't apply to single-family developments. However, that said, we think that what is in here is a nicely drafted and meaningful first step. It's going to allow us to consider a tool that we aren't yet able to consider and to discuss that, so we're very supportive of moving that forward in the present fashion. In regards to the construction excise tax, that's also in the Dash A5, again, it's not perfect, but it's pretty good. And it would allow cities across the state, as you just heard, for example, from the city of Eugene, to consider this tool as just another tool in finding affordable housing solutions. You may know that the city of Bend has, and I think, frankly, we are the only city to date with a construction excise tax that's purely used for affordable housing. We've been doing this since 2006. We charge 1/3 of 1% of building permit valuation for industrial, for residential, for commercial, basically for all building permits filed with the city. To date, we've loaned out over $11 million via that program. The money that we've raised has helped match, I think it's over $60 million in state and federal money and outside sources. To date, we've put over 640 units on the ground. By the end of the calendar year, we hope to have 700 units on the ground that would be purely enabled by this fund, units that probably otherwise wouldn't have happened. And for the most part, those are targeted at about an AMI of about 60%, sometimes less, sometimes more. We try to hit a range of housing options for our residents. And so we're very supportive of the additional flexibility in construction excise taxes that's included in the bill. We think that it's drawn up with the latitude that we need to consider at some point an increase in that and use it for the successful programs that we have in place. So just, you know, quickly to sum up, we applaud everyone that's put effort into the bill. We do think there are two meaningful things that we can look at here. It's far from the end of this conversation. I'm sure we'll be back in 2017, perhaps looking at tweaks and certainly looking at new opportunities as well. But for the time being, we'd urge you to move this forward, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Eric. Questions for Ben?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Stern, if you still want to come up.
Good morning, Chair Hass, members of the committee. My name is Mary Stern, and I'm here on behalf of the Association of Oregon Counties. The lack of affordable housing is a problem statewide in every county across our state. County commissioners and judges need tools to be able to deal with this issue, and that's why we support Senate Bill 1533, which provides several of those tools. I have not seen the Dash 6 amendments, but I believe our support will continue. The tools included in this bill are permissive for counties who are able to take advantage of them. Who wish to take advantage of them, they can. So with that, I'll just end my testimony and ask if you have any questions.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Thank you. John Van Landingham, you are one of the gurus here on this subject, and we called you once before, but you're outside smoking cigarettes.
He's working on the future tobacco bill, Mr.
I did grow up in Virginia, so I can. John Van Landingham, Lane County Legal Aid. Thank you, Chair Hess. I'm an advocate for affordable housing and have been for a long time. I support SB 1533 with the Dash 6. I've seen the proposed amendment for that. I've read the Dash 5 thoroughly. Just two short points. One, clearly the bill is not perfect. You've heard that already. There are still opponents. It's been a hard-fought compromise to get to this point. I think it works. You might also focus on the proponents at this point, the people who have come on board after months of working this out. That includes housing advocates statewide. It includes the cities of Portland, Bend, and Medford. It includes landlord groups. It includes the Oregon Association of Realtors, and it includes home builders. And I would remind you that Mr. Home Builder, John Chandler, wrote the current preemption which is involved in this issue. So I think that tells you something about this compromise. It involves both sides of the spectrum on this issue. Finally, I'd also say that you've heard a lot about the housing crisis in Oregon. It is a significant issue. The solution is supply. The solution is not rent control. The solution is to increase the number of units of housing. There are several ways to do that, but this is the only bill this session that's going to do something about that, and I hope you won't go home without doing something about it. Thank you.
Questions for John? Sir, your expertise and encouragement has been very valuable. Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1533. We'll return to that later this afternoon. You ready to go?
Yeah.
You ready to go for your bill? Okay. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1545.
I'm having a cup of coffee.
Cal, we have an amendment here. Can you brief us on how the amendment changes the original bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Yes, Senate Bill 1545, just to refresh your memory, was the underlying bill allows for the formation of children's special districts. We do have the dash one. It's up there in OLIS. And what the dash one does is it removes the authority of the children's special district to call upon the county or the district county district attorney for advice as to any district business. It also removes the authority of district board to employ special counsel at any time. It also eliminates the requirement that monies received by the children's special district be deposited with the county treasurer, and then also eliminates the children's special district fund administrative expense limit of 5% of the taxes collected. So it's taken out a number of provisions related to requiring county administrative resources be dedicated to the children's special district.
Okay. Senator Riley, looks like you took aim at some of the...
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I listened to the testimony of the county commissioners and heard that their most hated piece of this legislation was the fact that we were burdening the counties with the use of their treasurer and their attorneys. And so I wanted to see if taking those things out would change anything. I seriously doubt if it will, because I think they'll still not like the bill. But the point of this bill is to help children stay out of trouble, stay off the streets, get some extra help with their educational needs, keep them in school, keep them fed. And this is probably the best thing that we can do in this state is to keep our children from going to jail later on. It not only helps them now, it helps the state save money in the future. And one of the things that is said about this is, well, it's going to cause some compression. And yeah, it may. And but that's up to the people to decide. And keeping our kids safe and out of jail is much more important than fixing potholes. There are several organizations which have supported this, and I won't name them now, but they did put out something called the 2016 Children's Agenda. It's an organization of over 100 children's advocacy groups who've supported this bill. With that, I'll answer any questions.
Questions of Senator Riley, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Wright, it would be helpful if you just describe what the bill would now do.
Sure.
If it was amended, what would it do?
As amended, the bill would do one thing. It would allow citizens to decide to form a special district for children to provide out-of-school time for their children. That district could be any size. It could be as small as a community. It could be as large as multiple counties or parts of counties. But it would require that the citizens in that district that they have defined gather signatures, at least 15% of the registered voters of the county, of that district, and present that to the county commissioners. The county commissioners would then hold an election to determine if the people in that district actually wanted to form themselves as a special district. That's really all that the bill does. That district, if formed, would be like other special districts. They could go out for a levy, but again, it would have to be the voters who decide if they're going to pass this levy. And that's pretty much it. They would have a board. If they're formed, they would form themselves as a district with a board who would decide what projects, what kinds of things they would be doing. Those could include anything from food programs during the summer, kids who are on reduced and free lunch during the year, go hungry during the summer. This would be something that they could work on a project. They could work on keeping the kids reading during the summer so that when they go back to school, they haven't forgotten what they learned last school session. There could be some things like, well, Boys and Girls Club. They do a lot of good work, but they don't have enough money to do things. This could be one of the places where they could be helped to do their projects, and they could bring projects to this group. Any number of organizations could bring projects and suggest projects to this group, much as was done with the Commission for Children and Families when that existed. That's pretty much how they work. They didn't get all their money from the state or the county either. A lot of the money came from grants that the board went out to find. So it's not all about money from the county or from the state, but it's about programs to keep our kids safe, fed, well-educated, and out of jail.
Thank you, sir.
Good explanation. Okay, Senator, thank you.
Mark Landauer and Wendy Johnson.
Good morning, Chair Haas, members of the committee. Mark Landauer here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. And thank you for allowing me to take a few minutes of your time. Again, the special district opposes House Bill 1545, and I want to make it very clear to the members of the committee that we certainly don't have any quibble with the objective that Senator Riley is trying to achieve, which is providing additional services to children after school. It certainly is a challenge for some communities, but I want to emphasize that there are other ways to tackle this problem without having to create a newly separate government that will be plopped down on existing taxing jurisdictions that will inevitably, in some cases, result in compression. There are some other problems with the bill that I mentioned previously, and I'll just repeat those again. Many districts, cities, schools are already providing after-school programs. There will be questions about the specific services that are being rendered from the proposed district, whether or not those services ought to be categorized under the general government category or the education category that was created under ballot measure 5. And so for these reasons and others, we remain opposed to the bill. I would offer once again, though, I'm happy to work with the senator to look at other means by which we can tackle and try to get additional funding for these programs. And with that, I'll be happy to conclude my remarks and take any questions that you may have.
Okay.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, Wendy Johnson here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I would echo what my colleague from the special district said. The cities obviously support children's programs. I think you all know what the solution is, and that's to fix Measure 5 and 50, and then we wouldn't have this problem of compression. Local voters would be able to decide what programs they do create and what districts they do create. But Measure 5 is now 25 years old, and it doesn't work. I've submitted written testimony that explains why the League has to oppose this bill. Normally, we're all for local control and would support creating such a district, but we're in such dire financial situations in many parts of the state. The numbers are in my testimony that was provided for the last hearing, but I think people forget that 60% of our cities are in compression, 89% of our schools are in compression, and 35 of the 36 counties are in compression, and that's just this fiscal year. The Department of Revenue creates this property tax statistics report that I'm sure the Revenue Committee has seen. It lists those numbers for you. If you create another district, all the existing districts, including the cities, counties, and school districts, all have to be compressed, and so we're competing. And so for those reasons, we need to oppose the bill.
Senator Riley.
Thank you. Thank you for that. You're absolutely right. The real problem is Measure 5 and Measure 50. But until we fix that, then the children have a problem. And we need to work on that issue, but we need to, in the meantime, we need to take care of our kids. I understand. Cities, counties mostly want to take care of the kids. They're not opposed to the idea that I'm proposing. The problem is they're not doing it. They're not opposed to doing it, but they're not doing it. And until we start doing it, being not opposed to it's not good enough. I agree. We need to fix Measure 5 and 50, and that'll help. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Riley. Any further questions or comments? Okay. Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1545, which leaves a public hearing and work session that I will open on House Bill 4094. I'm not sure if we have any testimony or people signed up to weigh in on this. I think we might be ready to go.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we don't have any testimony.
We still don't have a fiscal.
We do. We have all the paperwork ready, and if you
refresh us on
the. Just would like to recap and refresh on the bill. The issue that the bill is trying to deal with and the amendment stems primarily from the conflict that occurred between marijuana and banking after the legalization with Measure 91 in Oregon and also in Colorado and Washington. And to deal with this, the federal government issued the Department of Justice the Cole Memo, which allows for parameters that the federal government will not interfere with the issues coming from the legalization. However, having that, it did not deal with the banking regulations and continues having the difficulties with the actual banking and transmission of money and paying with different electronic means and so on. So the federal government was not necessarily know the banking was ready to deal with these issues. This bill attempts to try to start addressing these issues. It does not necessarily solve all these problems. However, it is a step towards looking into these issues and finding a way to bypass these difficulties and start chipping at a different segment of how the banking industry deals and looks at these funds. The amounts and change that it would happen if this starts a process, basically it will end up improving or changing the federal regulations that you have, and you would end up with this movement, slowly, baby steps in Oregon, changing and improving the process of collection, transmission of money, paying taxes, and you know, in general, a great advance in the efficiency of keeping books and records and so on. However, that this is the first step and not necessarily the final or the good, the ultimate solution, if you will.
But I think you editorialized that this is a great advance.
Yes, Mr. Chair, what we said in the revenue impact statement is and let me read it, will be a catalyst for a much smoother process of transferring money and paying taxes electronically, and that improvement in the process of collection will be a great advance in the efficiency of keeping records. And that basically primarily stems from the fact that the state would be able to affect the changes in the banking regulations on the federal level, because the federal government is probably not concerned at this time of changing anything accordingly.
No, it's good. We appreciate your enthusiasm. All right. I don't have anybody signed up to testify today, so I think we can.
Only a work session?
We are in a work session, Senator Boquist.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm really a proponent of bags of money, so I don't know about this, but that's okay.
I move the A6 world. Dated 2/15/16 into the main bill.
Senator Boquist moves the A6s into House Bill 4094. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 4094 as amended by the A6s to the floor with a do pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 4094 as amended to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Just for the record, Mr. Chair, despite this bill, I do want you to know it's still legal to carry bags of money around, regardless if it has anything to do with this bill. I mean, it seems like everybody seems upset about bags of money, but I'm just pointing out. It's still legal under state and federal law.
I shouldn't say this, but I just finished 5 seasons of Breaking Bad last night. I understand bags of money. Further discussion? Seeing none, House Bill, objections, seeing none, House Bill 4094 passes and goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do-pass recommendation. Senator Riley will carry it. Okay.
Breaking Bad must have got you confused there, Mr. Chair.
We're going to stay in recess until later today. Hopefully noon hour, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, we'll be able to come back and revisit Senate Bill 1533 with a -6 amendment. And so, Senator Boquist?
I have committee at 1, just so you know, so yeah. I'm hoping 2.
Okay.
We'll be
flexible. We'll be flexible, and we'll pass it, and it will be a great advance.
Yes.
Okay. So we will stay in recess until an announcement is made, and when we come back and go into a work session on 1533.
Okay, well. All right. I know, but this one we just issue notice and never do it.
You want me to start?
No.
Where do you want me to start from? Or just the 6?
6.
Just a 6. Okay. That's easy.
We're back in session. Welcome, everyone. This is, make sure I go into a work session on Senate Bill 1533. I think we're still, you know, public hearing and work session. And before us is the -6s to Senate Bill 1533. And Kyle is here. And if you could give us a brief summary of what that amendment does to this bill.
Sure thing, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee and Mr. Chair. Yeah, we do have the -A6, so that is up in OLIS. The one, it more or less takes the same same information that's contained in the A5, and there's additional language in the A6. So the change in the A6 from the A5, it's located on page 5 of the A6 amendment, and it's, I'm thinking that's paragraph 10. So it's lines 17 through 23 for anyone. I think we can get it up on the screen, but. So the A6, what it's doing, and I added this in the SMS for clarification, it just points to what the changes are, but it requires the adopted incentives. So these are the incentives that be adopted for the developers following the, let's say, the inclusionary zoning. So if a city or a county adopts the inclusionary zoning, they are then required to have a number of incentives, and they also may provide other incentives. But so relating to those incentives, they must be related in a manner determined by the city or county to the required percentage of the affordable housing units that's required in the zoning ordinance.
Okay.
So that was the language change there.
Thank you. And Senator Dembrow is here to give us his
summary. So I do have a question, staff, first. Okay. I know Kyle has an economics degree. Do you have a minor in housing, too? how do we get tobacco housing? What kind of strange combination?
I feel like I could try to get course credit at this point.
You should. I heard we're going to get the wolf bill in here.
Senator Dembrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, it's a pleasure to come before you today at what I believe is the end of a long road. If you look at the history of the development of this bill, you'll see that we've been working hard to find a sweet spot where the preemption on inclusionary housing can be lifted, and in a way that'll give local governments the ability to craft ordinances that meet their local needs, while at the same time providing sideboards that will give local industry and developers confidence that that these ordinances will be designed to make sure that their projects can pencil out, because that's what everyone wants. Everyone wants to see needed housing get built all over the state. As we were moving, I believe, closer and closer to that goal, there remained some uncertainty among some developers that we weren't quite there yet, that we hadn't yet hit that sweet spot. So to that end, we've included this new Section 10 that is up there on the screen that clarifies that in crafting local ordinances, the affordability components of the projects will be related to the financial and non-financial incentives that the cities and counties put on the table. The intent of the language is to provide for programmatic determinations by cities and counties on housing unit percentages for development of multifamily structures. We aren't intending that cities and counties be required by this language to have to undertake case-by-case analysis for percentages of affordable units within a structure. The local determination will be made on a legislative plan, that is, by the local council or commission, with appropriate data-driven evaluation rather than on a quasi-judicial basis. And, you know, what I would expect is that in crafting these ordinances, local governments will do what I believe the city of Portland intends to do, and they passed a resolution to this effect back on February 3rd, which calls for an inclusionary process that would engage in a community-wide, quoting from the resolution, that would engage in a community-wide data-driven discussion that would include but would not be limited to members of the development community, as well as affordable housing experts and advocates. A panel of housing experts with representation from the development community would be expected to advise the council throughout the discussion of an inclusionary housing ordinance. That's the kind of participatory process we're looking for, and that I believe will allow cities to really move forward in meeting the affordability needs of their residents. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions about this.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Dembrow. I mean, we're the stop block here, because we're revenuers, and as I was making, Kyle now wants, you know, college credits for doing housing projects, because it's not exactly in our expertise. We did hear some testimony over the last couple of days that we're in here, and I'm just looking for your commitment that there may be in the future, in the next session or the next two sessions, some refining, we'll just say, on one side or the other, that needs to be refining and as we implement this. And I'm just, since that was displayed by both developers and cities and nonprofits, just looking for your nod that, you know, we have the sweet spot right now, but the sweet spot might need to have some jars and lids put on it at some point, and looking for your commitment in the future to consider that.
Of course. I wish I could say no, Senator. I wish I could say that.
You got a yes, perfect product. Right.
But no, obviously that's the case. I mean, I wish I could say that the affordability issue is going to go away, you know, but it's not. And so we're going to have to look for new tools. We're going to have to look to make sure that the tools that we're adopting today are working and improve them if they're not.
Thank you.
Other questions of Senator Denbrough? Senator Denbrough, thank you. I know you've been burning the midnight oil and appreciate your flexibility in finding that compromise.
Thank you. Thank you for your help, too, Chair.
Senator Boquist, you have a motion.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bertschinger has told me that this is okay, so I move the dash A6s stated 223-16 into the main bill.
Senator Boquist moves the Bertschinger A6s into Senate Bill 1533. Discussion? Hearing none. Objections? Hearing none. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 1533 as amended with the A6 to the floor with a due pass, as long as I'm not carrying it.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 1533 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of comments. I am going to support this bill, but I do have a couple of comments. And one of the comments is about the percentage of median family income, which means affordable housing, being 80% on page one. And then on page three, we talk about the low income means income at or below 60% of the area median income. And again, in another place, low income means income at or below 80% of the area median income. That bothers me a bit that we have different definitions of basically the same thing. And I think that that's something we should look at. I'm also concerned for some of my cities in my district, Forest Grove, Cornelius, North Plains, and maybe even Hillsboro, meeting this 20-unit definition. I'd like to see smaller cities have a 10-unit maximum minimum, and we could go from there. But those are things that concern me, and I hope that we're able to continue this conversation into the future.
Thank you. Further comments?
Comment.
Senator Bertschinger.
If we further this conversation into the future, could it be in another committee?
I second that option.
Further comments? I just want to say thank you to all of you who worked on this together. I know this isn't exactly what all of you wanted, and we talked a lot, and I think people heeded the admonition to not let the perfect get in the way of the good, and that's what happened here. And I believe in the power of deadlines. I think that helped too. This is really a pretty monumental bill for this legislature, which has been struggling with inclusionary zones for many years. And so I'm proud that we were able to be part of all of your work and the principals, including Senator Denbrough, burning that midnight oil and working over the weekend to get this together. With that, clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bertschinger.
Yes.
Senator Edwards.
Yes.
Senator Riley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Certainly.
Chair Hass.
Hass votes aye. The measure passes. Senate Bill 1533 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation, and we'll do a co-carry with Senator Bertschinger and Senator Denbrough. Okay?
The misery continues.
That's all before us today. We are adjourned. That's all before us today. We are adjourned.